I won't
say
anything
live
from here forward.
We're not.
Movie spoilers.
Can you hear Tesla snoring, by the way? Because I can throw her out if necessary.
I don't. Do you, Roger?
No, you have a...
I left Sawyer in the room. We'll see.
I can't stand it when people like have birds in the room. It's like,
oh like Justin. Yeah. I don't think they do anymore because they moved the studio, but it used to be in all of his recordings.
There's a bunch of people on Twit who do that. It's just like, speaking of Twit, did you see Scott on, what was he on? iOS Twit? Today.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah. No, I know he's been on TNT a bunch recently.
No, it was TNT. You're right. You're okay. Right. But it was Megan. That's what made me think iOS Today. He was, oh, it was Megan. So fun. Really, oh god, I love
you
her.
Really love her. I will need control though.
Ah, very good.
By the way, I recommend following her on Facebook. She is absolutely hilarious.
I do follow her. Oh, there you go, Roger.
Definitely worth
thank
the
thank you.
Yeah, I'm gonna be on Twit after South by Southwest, so the week after, I think it's the 19th of March or something like that.
Oh, cool. Good. Peace in our land.
Yes, please.
Yeah, well,
enough other non-peace.
You can get it.
Yes.
Nope. I'm all optimism now.
I am actively trying to cultivate that. It's hard though.
Yeah. But if we all try.
I'm not even gonna start. It won't end. It won't end.
Seriously.
Betty White was talking to Katie Couric, and Katie kept trying to bait her into being angry, and she's like, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah. I find myself getting extra sensitive to negativity these days.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just me getting older or a combination of me getting older plus so much negativity being out there.
So that book I sent you, the Hidden Secrets of the Middle-Aged Brain, just in a part where they're talking about two different things. One is mirror neurons, where your neurons actually fire as a result of what you're looking at and listening to, mm-hmm. and will reflect it. And they first discovered it with a monkey that they had wired up to do a bunch of stuff. And they went out to lunch. And when they came back in the room, the one guy ate an ice cream and everything lit up on the monkey as though he had lifted his hand up to his own mouth. And they're
like just what? Imagining that whole thing.
Right. And so when you're around negative people, that's what happens. And the other thing was that being around positive people and having positive thoughts actually improves your memory. Because that's the focus.
Improves your memory. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's because I think the reason, and I'm not sure if this is still the case, is that people like happy thoughts and subconsciously try to repress negative thoughts, and so they tend not to remember things when you're around negative people because it's all negative and you don't want to remember that.
But it's also as you age, this effect gets stronger, and in middle age, and by the way, I love it because they define middle age as 60. Yeah.
Oh, that's 120. Great. I am so happy.
Yeah, they do it right up front. They
good
go,
news, everyone.
35. We're talking about
right.
60 here.
I'm gonna go sing in the rain now because I'm it's weird. Like I don't have a negative outlook, but I definitely don't have a positive. Like I don't have like it's gonna be like sunshine and rainbows kind of thing.
I'm the kind of person if I was on the Titanic, I'd say, hey, we're getting swimming lessons today.
on the Titanic,
but,
it's like
those people keep their memory longer, so I'm doing it. Can't talk me out of it.
On the Titanic, I would be one of those people that says, okay, how do we make another boat with all the crap we have on the ship?
Yeah, there you go.
That's literally what I would say.
You don't want to be so positive that you deny what's actually happening and then are unable to deal with it, right?
So yeah.
It's like swimming lessons is good because it's like that will maybe help you survive a little longer.
And we're going to swim to the boat Rogers building.
Right.
Perfect. That's great. But I'm thinking, like, listen, this is a luxury liner. At least half of the ship is a luxury liner.
I think a lot of people see positivity as denial. And those are two different things. Mm-hmm. Being positive doesn't mean you're denying reality.
No, I'm definitely not, like, gnashing my teeth angry. Like, I'm not angry, but I'm definitely like, oh, there's stuff that needs to be done kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are you using your MacBook Pro with a secondary monitor, Tom?
Nope.
Hmm. I'm trying to figure out how to change the. I think I have to change the brightness. I think I have to use the display's preference pane now. The one on the touch bar seems to only talk
to the main laptop.
Yeah. So like, I've noticed if I bring this down a little bit, I'm not quite.
Well, which is your which is set as your primary monitor?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, because I'm wondering if your laptop is versus the external monitor.
Yeah, no, I understand the question. I'm just saying I have not paid attention to that lately. Mm-hmm. I don't think I have flux on this one. My touch bar started to disappear from time to time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's
actually
not good.
More specifically the control strip side of it.
Yeah.
So I've been going into activity monitor and force quitting it, and it comes back.
Huh.
You know,
it's pretty neat because I poke it to try to wake it up, and I almost always hit the sleep button, which is usually not what I want when I'm doing that.
No, definitely not. I hit Siri a lot by accident when I'm trying to hit delete.
You can take it out.
Yeah, I probably should.
So now what you'll do is you'll mute and unmute your Mac all the time instead.
Yeah, right. But which is less, faster. I guess that's less of a big deal.
Yeah, it's faster than turning on Siri and escaping out.
Yeah.
That's my big tip of the day.
It's a good one.
Now with less annoying. where did Flux go? I used to have Flux. I think I didn't put it on this Mac yet. It says I always look the wrong color compared to you. Yeah, I look pretty blue. Now you look tan and happy.
Tan, rested, and ready. It's amazing what you see when you're sitting in a different place. I'm like noticing
dust bunnies or what?
The door over there needs a little weather stripping. It's got weather stripping, but it needs to be replaced.
Oh, I need to
sit here and look at that.
You know, that's what I need. I need weather stripping in my front door because it's like you can kind of, like, you know, when it's dark or not dark, it's morning and the inside is dark. You can see light sticking out.
Yeah.
From the outside. So I just need to get some weather stripping just to save energy.
Yep.
So in the chat room there, the chat for the Google Doc, I just showed you Steve's weather station.
Oh, let me look.
It's not too exciting right now. It was really fun yesterday. I was watching
the Google Doc? Really?
I think so.
Chat for the Google Doc is not coming up for me. Chat is unavailable. Trying to reconnect.
Okay, so it's not, how about in
that's not that you didn't put it in. Google Docs is not. I'm loath to reload it right before the show, too.
I just put it in the chat for the Hangout. See if it's in there.
That'll work.
I would open a new tab if I
see
were
that. There we go.
About it. Don't leave the Hangout. Don't
redirecting
leave us, Tom.
You. Yeah, don't leave the Hangout.
So it's funny. If you drag your cursor across the graphs, you can see the real time or the historical data.
Oh, yeah. Nice. That's really cool.
Isn't that fun?
Is this site part of the device that he's using or just a independent?
So this Weather Underground is actually crowdsourced, which I didn't know. It's okay. All people like us with weather stations that point back to it. So it's aggregated so you can jump around and see what the weather is real time in different places.
Wind gust and the temp.
Yeah. I thought it was silly getting a weather station. It's like, it doesn't rain. And then he got rain gutters. I'm like, Steve, seriously, this is a waste of money. Laughing now.
Doesn't really rain, but when it rains, it pours.
I think there's a song about that.
It's not going to be sung by me. As tempting as it was. All right, I'm going to start our video broadcast. We got about 5 minutes.
This was only audio excitement. Huh?
Yeah, and it wasn't live. So now we're going to be live.
Dondo Beach.
Okay, she's snoring real good now.
Hey there, everybody on the videos.
Hello.
We are going to be doing the show from a different location today. I'll talk about that on the main show in case it sounds different.
Should I go get my umbrella?
Yeah. The rain wasn't coming from above. Though the water wasn't coming from above, we need galoshes. I guess.
Oh, did you guys have a sump pump?
No, we don't have things like that up here.
I don't think
what are you talking about? My place came with a sump pump. I actually bought a replacement. Yeah. There's a basement to it.
So there is. Oh, yeah. So few places have.
He has a raised foundation, though. He's up there in the valley.
Well, you know, what's funny is that although it rained hard, I thought it would have been harder, but I guess either the hills or a lot of it got washed into the west side. And then slowly.
Yeah, thanks. The hills are alive.
The hills are alive with people fleeing the waters. Echo.
Oh my God, did you just, you did not do the discussion story? No, wait. Yeah, a different one?
I did the one you suggested last night. Snapchat. Oh, I'm just using that as a news hook. If you read all the way through, it's my way of going like Snapchat did this today, which raises the idea of blah okay. blah blah blah.
I got you.
It's a segue in.
Exactly.
Segui is segui. Segui.
It's so gooey.
It's alive.
It's alive. Alive.
Zard Dumman says.
I wonder how many different things I'm going to screw up because it's not the same setup.
You know, I could make an AIFF recording at the same time of both sides if you wanted me to do that.
It would be a like fifth version. Okay. If it's easy, go for it. It never hurts. I have a second audio recording, and I have the YouTube stream. So it would be a fourth.
Fooling around. Let's not.
Yeah, that's fine. Roger, do you still run a recording too?
No, but I can.
Well, yeah, you don't have to. I knew you were for a while just to test your setup.
Typically, I only do that if you're not around or you have a different setup, just because
I'm always
worried that it's gonna screw up
Hangouts,
but I can't.
This is gonna be a good show. I'll explain where I'm at in a little bit, but it basically has to do with water falling from the sky and then landing in the ground and then piling up and then coming into my basement. You probably figured out from that.
The subtle hints that you put together there. Wow. They cracked the code.
Oh, itchy.
Oh, my gosh. I'm not as young as I used to be either. Moving all those boxes around downstairs wore me out.
I love it when people refer to, you know, someone as aging. I'm pretty sure we all are.
Yeah.
Pretty sure.
I'm not as young as I used to be, unlike some of you who are aging backwards. Yeah. I'm like Benjamin Button, I suppose.
Or Merlin,
yeah.
I really like this lighting on you, Tom. I'm not kidding. That white background just...
Yeah, thanks. Really, I mean, it's a different camera, too, so that probably is part of it. And, you know, we have a nice cloudy day, so...
Right. It's indirect
muted,
sun.
It's a muted light.
Well, it does light... It's an even light, but it also is a high contrast, so yeah. your head sticks out.
But your file size is probably nice and small.
Yeah, it's easy to compress.
Yeah, you're going to see this video is going to be like a quarter the size.
2 megabytes. Right?
Except you can't reach back and grab something.
Right.
I'll try to bring up a whole bunch of things that I know you would have within arm's reach.
Oh, right. Yeah. I don't have a lot.
Original Nintendo DS, Tom.
I have a... Corbell champagne magnet and a small terrarium with Harrison with Han Solo and Princess Leia in it. So I do have some fun things, not a lot though. All right, let's get going, shall we?
Why not?
Are you ready?
Yep.
Here, where's my record button? There it is. Here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Monday, January 23rd, 2017. I'm Tom Merritt. Veronica Belmont off on vacation. She was out marching. So thankfully, Allison Sheridan has agreed to step in and co-host with me today. Thank you, Allison, for joining.
Well, of course, always happy to be here. Definitely.
And if I sound a little different, or if on the video I definitely look a little different, it's because we had a little bit of rain here in the Los Angeles area, and we don't get a lot of rain. And when the rain builds up, apparently sometimes it saturates the hillside behind your house and then goes into the basement, and they have to rip up all the wet carpet.
In case anybody hasn't been following, Steve has a weather station in our backyard, and we got 3.25 inches of rain yesterday. Now, just to make sure that's in perspective, Los Angeles got 9.85 inches last year.
Yeah. All of last year.
This is a big number for us.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's quite a bit. So anyway, I should be back down there within a few days, you know?
Nothing shorted out.
Yeah, I'll be back. I'll be back down there. Things will probably look a little different, though, because we're going to have tile instead of rug, and all my marks are gone, so the camera is not going to be in exactly the same place. Anyway, we're going to talk...
Nothing shorted out, though?
What's that?
Nothing shorted out?
No, thankfully. I noticed it right as it had started, so I was able to move everything off the ground and get everything out of harm's way before it really started to seep out. It was lucky that I had been upstairs cleaning the kitchen and was taking the mop down to the garage and caught it right as it was starting to come in.
With a mop.
Yeah, with a mop in hand. We're going to talk about something really interesting that Allison brought up in an email when we were talking about the show yesterday regarding why we say, you know, I saw it on Facebook or I saw it in the paper. I'm going to let Allison explain that to you in a little bit. We got some other news here, though. Asus launched a Raspberry Pi competitor called Tinkerboard, that's T-I-N-K-E-R, with 4K decoding and gigabit Ethernet. Raspberry Pi is only limited to USB 2 speeds over Ethernet. It'll cost you £45, so it's a little more expensive than the Pi. I'm curious what fans of the Raspberry Pi think of this. Let us know. Feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. Sprint has purchased 33% of music service Tidal and promises Sprint customers will get access to exclusive music as a result. Now, here are some more top stories. All right, the big one. Samsung announced its findings regarding what caused the two recalls of the Note 7. If you remember, there was a recall because some notes were exploding. They weren't like totally incendiary, but they were catching fire and smoking, and it's not good. And they thought they figured it out. It was one battery supplier. They said it's fixed, but then more Note 7s started to catch fire, and they just ended the line. Here's what they found. The first issue, the reason they thought they fixed it when they recalled the batteries the first time, was that those batteries from that one supplier had a design flaw that caused the electrodes in one corner to bend towards each other, and the negative electrode was around the curve a little too much. It was supposed to stop before the curve to prevent even bending from causing a problem. That caused the positive electrode and the negative electrode to come into contact. That caused a short and caused the batteries to ignite. Now, Samsung stopped using those batteries, ordered another supplier to increase the number of their batteries made for the Note 7. That's when they thought they had fixed it the first time. However, in a rush to supply replacement batteries, the second battery suffered from welding burrs on the positive electrode. So little bumps on the electrode. It wasn't properly smooth. That would penetrate the insulation, touch the negative electrode, and cause a short. You know the rest. In addition, some of those batteries also did not have sufficient insulation, which they think was also a quality control program. Third-party firms UL Exponent and TUV Rhineland, those are three different firms, UL Exponent, TUV Rhineland, have validated the findings, and Samsung said it has added several steps to its testing processes for batteries and is forming a battery advisory board. Now, we have another little piece of adjunct information about when we can expect new Samsung phones, but Allison, how does that all play out for you? How does that sound?
Well, after this happened, I did a post on explaining what root cause analysis is. It's a very fundamental thing that you do is before you make more, you go figure out what the root cause is. And I understand that they did find the root cause of the first one, but and this does make me feel better. Clearly, they understand what went wrong. And hopefully, I don't have a lot of confidence in Samsung because I've had issues with them being not very credible and how well they track down errors. But they they obviously understand now why both of them failed, and they're putting into place things that would stop this from happening in the future. But it just fundamentally bothers me that they didn't do the full root cause analysis the first time. And it makes me wonder, what did their design specs say? Did it say 3,200 milliamp hours? Check. Wait, well, usually you put a little bit more into it than that.
I'm sure they did. But yeah, like where was the problem that allowed these bent batteries from SDI to show up in the supply chain? Now, as to root cause analysis, that's an interesting question because, and I'd be curious if somebody digs into this, whether they can verify this. What Samsung is describing is that they did find the root cause and then introduced a new problem. So the batteries from the third party, so from the other supplier, were fine until they put the rush order in. And then that manufacturer changed how they made the batteries to increase the supply, which introduced the burrs, which introduced a new problem.
I don't know that we knew that they were fine beforehand. We know that they were bad after they rushed them, but we don't know for a fact that I've read anyway that they were fine before they started rushing them. Rushing them obviously didn't help. But usually when you give a spec to a supplier, you include tolerances. And part of what they showed, as you mentioned, was the negative electrode lead went up into the curve, which allowed it to reach over and short with the positive electrode. And you put into the spec, this is what the tolerances are. There's drawings and they say plus or minus so many mils. They say these things.
Yeah.
You don't just say 3,200 milliamp hours or whatever.
Well, and even if they did say that, at least one or two of these should have been caught in quality control, right?
Yeah. And I'm not sure they were necessarily doing that. Or, I mean, you can't in the middle of the assembly line just take one and saw it in half, you know, to see whether they did this wrong. So this is a complex problem. I feel better. I definitely feel better. It makes me feel better that they found two different root causes that shows they really did dig in. I think they really did their work, and hopefully Samsung has learned its lesson, and maybe other manufacturers have as well.
Yeah. Now, Samsung has said that they are going to continue both the Galaxy S and the Galaxy Note family of smartphones. They're not going to back away from that name. There will be a Note of some kind. It may not be the Note 8. Maybe they'll change how they name them to try to distance themselves a little bit. But they also said, in fact, Samsung Mobile Chief Ko Dong-jin said, the next Samsung Galaxy S smartphone will not be introduced at Mobile World Congress. So that implies that for whatever reason, they're taking extra time before they introduce the next Samsung Galaxy S phone.
Yeah, I guess that's good. That's bold of them to stick with it. But considering the fact that people seem to be really wishing they could still hold on to these, that's kind of good, I guess. If it sounds like that'll help them.
Yeah, probably.
And 8 doesn't sound anything like 7.
Well, I've been curious. I'm curious if they say Note 8 or if it's the Note Rejuvenate. Or some other weird change to sort of just say, you know what, we're not even going to go in the numbered lines anymore.
Now with less explodey bits, right? Well, in other news, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission is investigating Yahoo's data breaches to determine if they should have reported to investors sooner. Yahoo disclosed a 2014 breach in September of 2016. Yes, 2 years later. And one from August 2013 in December 2016. So this is sort of in the obvious category, it seems to me, that if you waited 3 years to tell your investors about a breach.
Well, what Yahoo is saying is we told them once we had discovered and verified the breach. And what the SEC is looking into is, really? It took you that long? Like, they're asking the same question you are, which is, why didn't you know this earlier if you had such a breach? I'll be honest. Yahoo doesn't have the greatest track record in transparency, so it's a fair thing to investigate. On the other hand, it's not unusual for a company to have a large breach like this and not be able to detect it right away. There are certain attacks that are difficult to detect.
Yeah, my understanding was the second one, they didn't find out until law enforcement came to them and said, someone's claiming this is your data, is it? And they were like, whoa. So that one, okay, they were just, you know, not detecting it, which you could apply all kinds of nefarious or incompetency things to that. But the first one, I thought they did know for a fair length of time before they disclosed it. That was the one I think they're probably going to be in more trouble on.
Yeah. And my guess is it will be easier for them in proving what I was just saying. It's going to be easier for them to defend the one that was farther in the past because of the way it was brought to their attention. Unless the SEC is able to find somebody to say, no, I discovered this and told them, and they told me to ignore it a long time ago, which, you know, it's possible, but it's not necessarily likely. The other one is the one that we saw their chief security officer resign over how they handled a request to deliver some information to the government over. And this could start to bring that back up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Google released updated versions of Google Voice for Android with an updated version of Google Voice for iOS to follow in a couple of days, with the web updating along with whatever app you use. So once you've updated your app, your web experience will follow along. You get a material design refresh. There are now tabs for text messages, calls, and voicemail. Photo MMS is supported on most carriers now. That was a big hangup for people. Group texting is available in the Voice app rather than needing to go to the Hangouts app. You can still use the Hangouts app if you've migrated your Google Voice over there, but Google hopes you'll at least try out the Voice app. And voicemail transcriptions are now available in Spanish. Google says customers should expect regular updates and new features. So this is Google going out of their way to say, I know you all think we just abandon things, but really, 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 we are going to keep making versions of this product, so please try it.
You know, I was going to confess, and now I definitely will confess, I'm so frustrated right now with Google coming up with really cool ideas and then going, oh, look, new shiny toy, and running off and going and doing something else, that I honestly can't tell you what Google Voice is anymore, because I've heard so many different words that they've used to say, oh, no, this is our messaging service. No, this one. Wait, Allo, you know, all these different things they keep doing. Which one is Google Voice again?
Google Voice is actually fairly close to what it was, which is a way to take phone calls and do text messaging on any phone. So as long as you can install Google Voice or do it on the web, you can have a phone number that takes all your calls. You can have calls from one number routed to your Google Voice number. It's really functionally, at base, not much different than the Google Voice you knew when it launched oh so many years ago.
But I thought they abandoned that. That
well,
they took
everyone
that out.
Did because they were moving features of it over to Hangouts, but they never actually did abandon it. They just started, they have now started going back to it as they've started to move things out of Hangouts and out of Google Plus, which Google Plus they just, you know, gave a makeover to the other day. So I think they're trying to salvage the things from Google Plus that were good, like events and things like that, so that they could make something out of that. I feel like Google as a company is turning a corner where they're saying, okay, for a long time we just threw spaghetti against the wall and everything was in beta for a long time and that was the joke. Then for a long time, Larry said we need to focus and we killed a bunch of things and abandoned things and made everybody angry when we got rid of Google Reader, and that was the joke, because Google just kills things now. They don't stick with things. I feel like now they finally got to the point of really what we were doing was we had been doing too much. We were trying to figure out what we should do. And now we're starting to commit to the things that we've decided to stick with.
I hope so until they change their mind again, right?
Well, and that's true of any company, right? But it does feel like if Larry Page had said, look, we need to focus. We need to cut out a lot of things that don't make sense. You're going to have a lot of things that some people love get killed in that process. And then it's going to be a while before you finally say, okay, now we've got down to the things we should focus on. Let's start focusing on them.
Yeah. It would be nice to know which ones to hang your hat on. To
place
say,
your
this
faith
is the one
in. Yeah.
Yeah. To place
Feed
your
burner.
Faith in. I mean, if you look at a company like Microsoft, they might do something stupid, but man, they are going to grind away at that thing until it's not stupid. That is what they do, right? They stick with things forever.
Well, for the most part, yeah. I can think of a few exceptions, but it is more the typical Microsoft thing is to just like, no, we're still making Zunes. We're not going to stop making Zunes.
Okay, I think Clippy is probably still around, you know? Someday
some
Clippy
form.
Will...
Well, yeah, we always hear reports of Clippy's return. You're right.
All right, well, Google announced that all Chromebooks launched in 2017 will support Android apps. So far, the Acer Chromebook R11, Asus Chromebook Flip, and Google Chromebook Pixel are the only Chromebooks that support Android apps. Google also says that around half of the Chromebooks released in the past 2 years will be compatible with Android apps in the future.
This is almost an extension of our previous conversation here.
Yeah, well, how can they say that all Chromebooks will support Android apps? They don't control all Chromebooks.
No, but they control the operating system. And I think what they're saying is we've worked with our partners to make sure that they have the proper hardware to be able to run the software that we're going to put in Chrome OS that will allow Android apps to be supported.
But somebody could still make a stupid Chromebook that didn't do it, right?
I don't know.
Didn't follow whatever they said? I mean, it'd be dumb.
I suppose what they're saying is we don't foresee any of our partners doing something that dumb. Why would they?
But if they're also saying it's retroactive, that's even more confusing. I mean,
this is no different than the forward-looking part of this is no different than Microsoft saying, hey, all Windows installations will be able to do this or that in the future, because they assume that most people are going to install it because that's just part of how Windows works. The part in the past feels more like them looking back and saying, we're still trying to figure out which of these older models can actually support the software that we want to put on here.
I guess I don't know enough about what would make something... Actually, I don't know anything about what would make the hardware support or not support Android apps.
Yeah,
that seems kind of...
I think maybe one of the easier ways to think about it is think about emulation, right? You could emulate Windows in Parallels or VMware on an OS X machine, but there's a point where an older machine just doesn't have enough power to do
graphics
that emulation.
Card or whatever.
Yeah. And so I know that these Android apps aren't exactly emulation, but there's some things going on under the hood that require the processors to work in a certain way.
Okay.
In a Facebook post, Xiaomi Vice President of International Hugo Barra announced he's leaving the company and plans to return to Silicon Valley, in part, he says, due to health reasons and wanting to get back to where his friends are. Barra joined Xiaomi in 2013 to help the company expand its reach beyond China. Previously, Barra had been Vice President of Android Product Management at Google. He'll be succeeded by Xiaomi's Senior Vice President Zhang Wang. Wang joined Xiaomi in 2015 from Qualcomm China. He spent 15 years at Qualcomm China and has led Xiaomi's supply chain and intellectual property teams up until now. So a couple different interesting aspects of this. One is a longtime supply chain vet now becoming the international face of a Chinese person becoming an international face here. And Hugo Barra of Google heading back to Silicon Valley. Does he go back to Google, or does he go into the startup world, or does he really just take a break?
I'm going to go with Uber.
I'm going to go with some kind of Uber for something.
And it could be Uber for Uber. That way you win that one too.
It would be a coup for Google to get him back, don't you think?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And imagine what he's learned about both sides of that. It's
for sure.
Pretty interesting. Well, Foxconn chairman Terry Gao said Sunday Foxconn is considering investing $7 billion in a display-making plant to be located in the United States. Foxconn also announced an undisclosed investment in Chinese bike-sharing startup Mobike. Foxconn will help with the manufacturing in order to double annual production.
So
wait a minute. So Foxconn is going to have stuff manufactured here.
Yeah. Foxconn's building in India. Foxconn's building in Brazil. And thanks to the encouragement of SoftBank's Masayoshi Son, they are considering building a plant in the United States. So the formerly known Hanhai Precision is definitely trying to become a worldwide company, and investing in things like bike sharing startup Mobike is another aspect of that, saying, hey, you know, we have capacity to get involved in China. These bike sharing apps are very competitive, to get involved in a very competitive space and hopefully win. They're also working on creating handsets under their own design rather than just taking orders like they do for the iPhone. So I think Foxconn is something everybody associates with assembling parts, is something to pay attention to, because I'm not sure what they're going to end up doing, but they are obviously trying to become a more evolved kind of company.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that angle, but just the idea of Foxconn manufacturing here, that just blows the top of my head off. I just have trouble assembling that. Of how would that happen?
You need Foxconn to assemble that idea for you?
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty amazing. Well, that's cool.
Yeah,
jobs here.
Jobs here, and
maybe robots here.
It will be interesting to see what they get for their $7 billion. And I'm sure one of the things that Gao said was it depends on certain agreements with the government. So they're looking for tax breaks. They're looking for incentives.
Sure. And now it might be something that making certain components, you're better off if you can build them where you're going to deliver them or where the raw materials are for them. That can make it a lot cheaper from a supply chain perspective. I don't know what goes into making displays that would make them cheaper to do here.
Yeah. Or phones or anything. But that goes along with the fact that they are widening the kinds of businesses they want to be involved in.
Yeah. I wonder how big a displays they mean.
It's a time in a display making plant in the United States. Yeah. So it could be all kinds of displays. It could be televisions, could be phones, could be.
If it's TVs, maybe you don't want to move them later.
Yeah. Could be some shipping savings.
Deliver them here. You want to.
I was going to jump in.
Yeah, Roger.
On this, but typically what like South Korean and Japanese manufacturers do is they make just a large sheet of glass. And then they cut down to order to what they need. And certain sizes and certain aspect ratios work better in how you can cookie cutter. Like, we can get 42-inch TV panels out of this. We can get 27 phones out of this. You know, and so it really depends on the kind of quality they can produce, as well as like, of course, what Allison was alluding to is like what kind of value, how much money they can invest, and how much of a product they can come out with that they can sell it at a for-profit rate.
Is there any advantage to an international company? Foxconn's a Taiwanese company. Is there any advantage to making something in the U.S. as far as getting government contracts that they wouldn't be able to do if they were making it overseas?
I cannot, from a business perspective, I would say that's a wash. I would say maybe politically it might be different.
But they're still headquartered overseas, so it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you can't have foreign nationals working in the area where something's being built if that's going to be a government contract. Within the government, you also have to have, if you've got a contract with a portion of the government, and then you have a supplier that has foreign owned, there is all kinds of stuff you have to go through to be allowed to use that supplier.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of paperwork, and you try really not to have to do that one.
And well, what's interesting is typically before this, foreign companies would just do the quickest route, which is buy a U.S. company. I mean, that's what British Aerospace did. They bought United Technologies, which already was a conglomeration of multiple domestic military, you know, arms manufacturers. And so it's like, well, look, now we're, you know, 45-48% American. So now we can bid on all these contracts that used to be a no-go for them because they were considered a foreign entity.
That also doesn't always help. There's a thing called the Dun & Bradstreet listing for every company. And there's a section in there called the Global Ultimate Owner. And that global ultimate owner, at least with software, I know if that is a foreign country, is in a foreign country, that global ultimate owner, you have to do the paperwork. Yeah, and yeah. I submitted some in 1994, and I'm still waiting to hear back whether that we moved on, needless to say.
So whoever took over your job might hear. No, those are never going to be responded to.
Yeah. Someday.
All right. To get all the tech headlines each day in less than 10 minutes, you can subscribe, and please do, to dailytechheadlines.com. Now, Snapchat updated its publisher guidelines Monday, restricting publishers from posting pictures on its Discover section. That's the section that publishers make specifically. It's not just general snaps. If a person was using a picture that didn't have to do with the underlying story, that's not allowed anymore. You can't put up a woman in a bikini for a story about a guy in Russia, you know, getting hyperthermia, which is almost a real example there. They also prohibit linking out to other websites if the content they're linking to is not fact-checked and accurate. Snapchat said it also plans to give publishers a tool in February to age-gate content. So if content isn't appropriate for those under 17, they can stop that from happening. I'm not sure exactly how they do that, but you know, there's all kinds of ways you just ask people to be honest, I suppose. This follows the call for Facebook and others to do something about the reliability and credibility of sources shared on the platforms, which leads us to that thing I was mentioning earlier that Allison has been thinking about. Allison, tell me again what you were noticing when people talk about where they found out things.
Well, the first place I actually noticed this was people would say, I read on Medium. Mm-hmm. And I found that really interesting because Medium is has somehow organically become a site that is for thought pieces. You don't put your post about the latest iPhone release, you know, but you put a thought piece about what you think about the iPhone or about global issues. It's a thought place. So when you say, I read it on Medium, that's just sort of like, wow, that must have been deep, whatever you were reading. It was on Medium.
Well, I need to set aside time. It was on Medium.
Yeah, I got to think about that, you know. But then I started thinking about, had I ever heard that before? And it used to be I read it on the internet.
Right.
Then we don't say that anymore. But I was listening to someone talking about politics in the gym the other day. And the woman said, they were talking about how you can get involved and be an activist and that kind of thing. And the woman said, oh, really? You got a good list. Where can I find that? And she said, on Facebook. Well, okay, that's weird, you know, that you just said the internet basically there. And then, you know, we used to say, I read it in the paper. I don't remember that we said it was in the LA Times, but maybe if you said, I read it in the Wall Street Journal, again, oh, wow, that's probably a real source, right. You know.
People said, I saw it in the Post, but more often you're right. They would just say, I saw it in the paper.
In the paper. But even if you look at, like, I told my daughter how to rotate a photo using iMovie on the iPhone, and I wrote to her and I said, I Googled it. Or I found it on Google. You know, I didn't say I searched it. I said I Googled it.
Sure.
And I, even as I was doing it, I was thinking about the same context. Why are we saying where we found it? Are we doing that because we're trying to add credibility to what we're saying?
I think it's partly informational of, this is the place that I found it. And we were talking in the analyst Slack a little bit earlier today about the difference between saying I saw it in the paper or I heard it on the news. Back in the days when cities would have one, maybe two newspapers. So if you said, I saw it in the paper, everybody knew what you were talking about, right?
Right.
Most people didn't read the Wall Street Journal, and even fewer people were able to get papers from outside of town or the New York Times. So when you said, I saw it in the paper, everyone assumed, well, he would have said the journal if he meant the journal. So it must be whatever your local paper was. If you say, I saw it on the news, maybe you wouldn't specify the channel, but you'd know, well, it was one of three channels that do local news, right? So I know it's one of those three. Whereas today, we have such a much wider variety of sources, you'd think we'd be more specific. But instead, what you're noticing, and I've noticed it too, is we just mentioned the platform because that's simpler. And it goes back to that same principle with the news. Like when I said I saw it in the paper, I knew we all knew which paper it was. In St. Louis, it was the Post. When I say I Googled it, everybody knows, oh, she did a search, right? It's just a shortcut way of saying it. When I say, oh, it's on Facebook, then everybody goes, oh, okay, I know how to use Facebook. I know what that is.
But for some reason, I get mocked for saying I heard it on the news because these young kids today are going to say, so what are you, 90?
What news?
Right. Or, yeah, what do you mean you heard it? You were watching television, like through a cable? What are you, a caveman? So, and yet saying I saw it on Facebook did not make anyone in the room say, well, that was an idiotic answer.
Right, because from whom on Facebook? Where on Facebook? How old was the article? Who wrote it? What's the veracity, et cetera? And the same thing goes for Medium. I mean, it has a reputation for these long think pieces because some really good thinkers post on there. But just saying you saw it on Medium doesn't automatically make it a thoughtful post. It has to do with who actually wrote it.
And it could be thoughtful and wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yet, listen to what we said in the article about Xiaomi VP Hugo Barra. We said in a Facebook post he wrote it. Why was that important? That is actually kind of interesting that that's how he announced it. That could be a news angle in and of itself that he didn't announce it on Twitter. He announced it on Facebook. But it just, I still, you know, I saw this thing on Twitter. I saw this thing on Facebook.
Right,
you know, we constantly say it as though the context has some meaning, and I don't know that it does.
Well, and I would say in the Hugo Barra example, what I try to do and what I try to get Rich Stroffolino, who writes for Daily Tech Headlines, to do, and anybody who writes for the show, is say, try to be honest about where it came from. If Hugo Barra said it to a room full of reporters, you can just say Hugo Barra said. If Hugo Barra posted it, then it is interesting to know where. So if people are like, oh, I want to go find that, now they know, I'll look up Hugo Barra on Facebook and find it, if he said it on Google Plus or if he said it on Twitter, et cetera. So it's, in that respect, I think it's helpful to say this person said it in this way versus Hugo Barra told The Verge, right? In which case it's like, oh, okay. If he wrote it on Facebook, I can go look at it myself and I know that that's a real thing that he wrote. If it's Hugo Barra told The Verge, then I have to do some trusting and say, I've got to trust that The Verge isn't lying, that they're quoting him properly. And I have questions. Why didn't he tell anyone else yet?
But that also, that highlights something that I do like is when you say it's on The Verge, you've got some idea in your own head already of whether you trust The Verge's point of view, whether they've been giving you good facts. So when I knew we were going to talk about the Samsung thing and the batteries, and I just did a search, Samsung batteries fire, and you know, news last 24 hours. And it was all these sites that it's like, well, you know, NBC, that's adorable. No, I'm going to skip over. I went down until I got to one that I thought might have some actual engineering information in it that wasn't going to be just a fluff piece about it regurgitating what the AP got or whatever. And so to me, to say on TechCrunch, they reported, well, that means something. Mm-hmm. It might mean something good. It might mean something bad, but it means something. But I read it on Facebook means nothing.
Yeah, I think it makes a big difference. It's one thing if like in the Samsung case, I think it's a good example. I feel fine saying Samsung announced yesterday the causes of their fire because they announced it publicly in a live stream that everyone could watch. And so the facts of what they announced aren't going to be dependent on the source where if you're reading it on TechCrunch or Recode or whatever. However, if I'm talking about something that is sort of a discovery like, hey, there was an SEC filing that people didn't notice and Ars Technica dug it up, that sort of informs me of like, oh, okay, this is a site that does that. I've heard them doing that before. If I say it's Digitimes that dug it up, it makes me want to go find the SEC post because Digitimes has a reputation for sometimes fudging things and exaggerating things. I don't think they outright lie.
But mean something.
Yeah. You take that into account.
But if you had said it was on Medium, that doesn't mean anything.
No, you're right.
They're just extra words that don't add value.
But it does tell you something, and that something is this is a person who wants to present themselves in a certain way. They want to present themselves as a serious thinker.
I guess. But if I had said Tom Merritt wrote on Medium, blah, 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 that would add credibility to what I said, or not, depending on your opinion of Tom Merritt and his point of view. But just saying Medium is just, it just seems like such a funny thing that's just become part of our lingua franca to say these words that don't add anything.
No, it's the same as with the Hugo Barra thing. Saying Tom Merritt wrote it on Medium to me is saying this person wrote something. And if you know that person, you might or might not be interested in it. And if you want to find it, this is where he wrote it. Versus just saying, I saw on Medium is sort of saying, I saw a lengthy think piece because that's the kind of thing that's there.
Right. It's sort of like, I'll meet you in Los Angeles.
Which is fine if you're trying to plan flights, right? But then once you get to Los Angeles, you kind of need a little more detail.
A little bit. I mean, I know not to, bring a jacket for the evenings because it can get chilly. That's all I really know.
Right. And occasionally it rains, but not very often. When it rains,
main goal was to make this bother everyone as they think about it now. Every time you hear somebody say it, it's just going to irritate you as much as it does me.
Well, and also to pay attention when someone says, oh, I saw it on Facebook, to respond, oh, who posted it? You know, to seek that extra information, unless you're not wanting to get involved in the conversation, which is perfectly fair. But if you are interested, like, try to find out a little more, because that's going to be telling, too. If the person's like, oh, it was a post from Allison Sheridan, then you're like, oh, OK, they were paying attention. They know who wrote it. And it's a person I'm familiar with versus, oh, I don't know. That's going to tell you a lot right there.
Well, another thing that you bring up a good point there. Another thing that is happening, I think, is it used to be if you saw an image, it would have something in it saying who posted that image. And, you know, people would watermark it or whatever, or it would be a link. I was really careful to always link back to who spent the time to create this piece of artwork or, you know, this meme even of whose cleverness wrote this thing. This would be good. But now it's just like, no, that was a funny picture. I'm going to post it again and post it again. And so when you say I saw it on Facebook, it literally isn't from anybody. Sure, Allison
really
linked
point.
To it, but it's nobody's, it's everybody's now.
Yeah.
And you don't, you know, that
it could be that, you know, and you say who you saw it from, but they're not the originator of the content.
Right. Allison posted this hilarious thing. And if you look, it was the 450 millionth share because it was a funny picture.
Yeah. These are all, I'm not saying we even have answers to all these questions, but these are great questions. I love thinking about this stuff because to me, this is a very important way that we need to learn how to consume this new world. And another point that we were bringing up in the Slack is back in the day, it was easier to be fooled in some ways because you only had three channels, three networks, you know, and one newspaper. So you might be less trustful of things because you're like, what are they leaving out? That can't be the whole story. And then if you were finding extra information, it was usually from a friend, maybe at the grocery store or you're standing around in the park and you have no way to check if your friend is getting accurate information, right? You're just having a conversation. Today, we have two problems that make it different and more complex, which is you have millions of sources. You can't say, well, it was the evening news. I know there's a certain level of credibility there because it could be a perfectly worthwhile source that's brand new and you just hadn't heard about it, or it could be a totally fly-by-night source that is not credible, but you can check. So when you hear these things on Facebook, which is the equivalent of standing around in the grocery store or talking in the park, you can go find out. And so it's both better and worse.
But I thought the way we find out whether it's true, our fact checking, is whether what you said agrees with what I already thought.
That's actually right. Yeah, that's okay. Actually how most people do it. And that's to me, that is the secret of all of this controversy over hoaxes and things like that. Is people didn't necessarily so much get fooled as just sought out something that reflected what they wanted to believe already.
And I like the dialogue that's going on. It's kind of dangerous because it can go one of two ways. Either it can make us be more careful and making sure. And I'm doing this where I read something. I'm going, wait a minute. Where's that from? Where do I know that from? Let me check that. But there's also the other half is it's easy to convince everybody to doubt everything so that nobody believes anybody.
Right. Which,
sure which way it's going to go.
Is always a fear. It's a rhetorical device in an argument to say, well, then you don't trust anything. But in practice, we usually come to an agreement eventually. Sometimes it's harder than others about like, oh, this is the level of confidence we need to reach.
Yeah.
And I also just wanted to quickly mention an old project. That's unfortunately not around anymore, but Troy found it on neo4j.com called Backstory. It's really interesting, and I kind of wish someone would come up with a version of this again. They would take hundreds of news sources, pull in news stories, and then try to connect them to each other so you could follow the actual events being described in the story. And you can see how old it is because it's talking about John Kerry and France, and you know, it's a couple of years old. I think it ended in 2015, November 16th, 2015. But it was a great way to like track through. And then you could also go in and find particular sources, but it would find the commonalities amongst various sources and say, well, these are how these particular people and events are connected.
Oh, I would have loved that. So many times I feel like I came in the middle of the plot and I don't know where, how did we get to where we are? And so I can't take that information, make sense out of it.
Really great for context.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to everybody who participates in our show, whether it's in Slack or in chat while we're live or in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Real quickly, want to jump across the pond to Nate Langson in the UK and find out what he's talking about on the Text Message podcast this week.
Cheers, Tom. Now, I won't deny it's been a bit of a slow news week this side of the pond in terms of tech, but one thing we couldn't escape is Apple's 25% price hike to UK App Store prices. We've taken a look at what that means for British Apple customers. We've also learned this week about what our government is planning to do with voice recognition. I'll just leave that little tease just hanging there within arm's reach, but the latest show with the answers is out now at techpodcast.uk.
Whoa, that price increase, man. Thank you, Nate. Techpodcast.uk. No co in there. I always want to try to put a co because I'm old fashioned. It's just techpodcast.uk.
Co is gone?
It's not gone, but you don't have to use it like you used to.
Ugh, that's going to mess with me.
I know.
Back in my day.
I don't like change. We got an email here from Scott at Patreon. I think he means because he supports us on Patreon. Thank you, Scott. Wanted to weigh in on the app permissions discussion from Thursday and Friday last week. He said, I've noticed this problem, especially while using my Xbox One. Since they switched to the Universal Windows platform, there is info, but little to no control as how to prevent overreaching app permissions on my console. Programs like NPR One via the Xbox ask to access your profile, contacts, location, etc. But when you see the permissions on the Microsoft Store link, it only says use your location, access your internet connection, and act as a server. CBS All Access is another one that requests your profile context, etc., and Android asks for a lot more. Other publishers, such as Enigma, which have about a dozen apps to watch free online TV shows, seem to ask for everything under the sun, and the list is too long, but just imagine it wanting every permission it could think of. Scott says, the only control I seem to have is to not install these apps, but it would be nice for a greater option to deselect permissions and take a loss of some of the features held within.
So I would be remiss in my ever so slight Macintosh bias if I didn't point out, I was thinking about this when you were talking about on Thursday and Friday as well. On iOS, you get asked as it requires it. Mm-hmm. So an app can say, when you first install it, it's, let's say the Me Too app was the context. It said, and I did install it. I took it off immediately after messing around with it.
You're
it didn't
a braver
work,
person
actually.
Than I am, Allison Sheridan.
So I put it on there and it said, hey, can I have access to your camera? Well, that seems like a reasonable request, right? Because it needs my camera because it's a photo taking app.
Totally.
Okay, so I hit that. And then I wanted to save it. And it said, can I have access to your photos? I said, yes. Then it said, hey, can I have access to your contacts? No, you can't. And that is a difference between the way Android does it and the way iOS does it is apps ask for all the permissions they might need up front. But iOS, they ask as they need it. So exactly what he's asking for is he's allowed to pick and choose which permissions. And it's not an all or nothing, like the app won't work a lot of times.
And what he's mostly complaining about is he's like, great, Android does it one way, iOS does it another, Xbox isn't doing it at all. And he would like it to do that.
Okay. Yeah, there you go. Definitely. It was funny that Me Too didn't even work once I'd gone through that grief anyway. It just spun.
It just didn't. Well, not surprised. Dwayne in Germany writes in to point out that while Microsoft is not participating in the same program as Amazon for transitioning vets into developer jobs, that was the internship program we mentioned last week, he says Microsoft has a pretty big program of its own that transitions retiring military to IT programs. I believe there are now up to 6 bases where this transition happens. I think it has been going since 2013, and one I will be using myself. Hey, congrats, Dwayne.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, so it's a different kind of program where Amazon's gives you an internship and you come to Seattle. This one sounds like it works on the actual bases as you're transitioning out, which is great.
Quietly doing the right thing without they're getting the advantage. Microsoft wins.
Yeah. Well done. Thank you, Dwayne, for writing in. And thank you, Allison, for joining us. A really pleasure, as always, to have you along.
Yeah, I definitely have some fun. Hey, what Steve and I are working on lately is we just went to CES, and instead of doing this big blast and trying to be first to get out interviews and that kind of thing, we sprinkled them out over quite a long length of time. So we have 4 video interviews a week that are going up over on podfeet.com. And I like to do some of the littler, weirder, squirrelier things that I don't do the, Ford announced kind of things. You know, I don't do big display manufacturers. We do smaller ones, but like the one that we just in the last couple of days is Willow. It's a portable breast pump that allows a woman to breastfeed while she's walking around and doing other things. If that isn't different than what most people are reporting, I don't know what, but it was very hard for me to do. That was difficult to keep a straight face, but it's a pretty cool product. So anyway, that's all over at podfeet.com. And Steve has done all of the work. I am simply the on-air talent. So
nice. You're a good team. Go check it out, folks, podfeet.com. Thank you to everyone who supports the show at dailytechnewsshow.com/support, including Ed Hackney, CryptoMaker, and Eugene Cheng. And special thanks to Andreas Ekberg and Scott, who both just raised their amounts. Thanks, you guys, at patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. We're live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And our website is dailytechnewsshow.com. We'll be back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. Talk to you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Boom! Good show.
Yay!
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you. This was fun. I wanted to read you something. I think I'm getting a halo effect from DTNS that I'm really enjoying. A woman named April Mendez in the SMR podcast Facebook group said, I'm sure that most people in this group, like me, are firmly entrenched in the NosillaCast SMR DTNS ecosystem.
Ah, nice.
And then she went on to say nice things about my show over on the SMR podcast. But I thought it was kind of neat to, for the three of us to be lumped together.
That reminds me, we need to get Chris back on.
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
I like being part of that that nexus. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty fun. Well, I hate to jam like this, but I do have to go jam. Yep. I got to help spend somebody else's money.
No worries. All go. Right. Enjoy. Spend
Thank
a lot
Thank you so
of
much.
It.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye, Allison.
All right. Now time for the real work, Tom.
If titles. You say so. Yeah, what's our titles?
Leading the pack is a medium level of credibility, which I thought was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
Get it, medium level. Yeah. I saw it on the Facebook. You know what? That's a phrase I've heard more often than not.
Yep.
Recently. Take note for future releases. Yeah. It might be a little too obscure.
Yeah.
Voice gets a facelift. I'm gets going a, with a Uber, Foxconn is building in all the places.
Yeah.
Medium is the message. The me to get it. That's a really good one.
That's a good one. Very Marshall McLuhan. I like it.
Pay attention to the medium. A medium for a new world. That's pretty good too. Google Voice makes the cut for now. Keep it. I'll meet you in LA. Oh, I like my news served medium.
How would you like your news? Medium.
Yeah.
Showbot.chatrealm.net. A medium level of credibility is pretty good.
There's I like that one. That's a really ones. Good one. I vote for that one.
All right.
And a haircut for me. Eventually.
Save and a haircut. Two bits.
Like, why would you pay someone to shave you? You're going to have to shave it within 2 days anyway. Like, is there something?
No, you get I guess if clean, you have a close shave that only a barber can deliver, and it takes longer. You don't have to go as long. You don't have to shave as soon. Is that not how it works?
I guess maybe like partially is like my facial hair grows at a very glacial pace. So if I use an electric razor, I don't have to shave for 3 days.
San Antonio, Texas,
I get a 5 o'clock shadow by like the third day. That's why you don't see me as a bearded fellow anytime soon.
Daily Tech News Show is powered.
Maybe robots.
I
here.
Like immediate. It level will be interesting. I think so does the voting audience.
Well, then, that's what we shall do. Almost put the wrong track. Almost put Thursday's track in somehow. I don't even know how that would happen.
Do sound.
Okay. It ended up being a meaty show.
It was.
Glad we started early.
Actually, I like the earlier start time.
You do?
I do, but I also know that it cuts into what might be juicy time release.
You know, honestly, and this is a discussion for another day, but it mostly cuts into earnings reports. The press release timeline is usually by 11 Pacific. All right, medium level of credibility. I'm to that point, by the way.
So cool.
Putting it in.
Putting it in. Yeah, I was watching SNL on Hulu last night.
During the show? Oh, okay. Last night.
No. Oh yeah, I totally catch up on all my feelings during the show. No, they wow. had Ansari. What's his name?
Aziz Ansari. Yeah.
Yeah, I was they do his name backward.
I like
that Aziz. Was a good show. It's funny because I don't watch Parks and Rec, and so I don't really know him other than from his stand-up things on Netflix or that.
Oh yeah, see, I've seen Master of None, but I've never seen his stand-up stuff. Is it good?
It's good. It's, to be honest, it's very predictable for me. Like, part of it is that a lot of comics are all over the place, but because of the nature of the way they do their performance, a lot of the jokes come back. And so if you've seen one or seen them in other places, it kind of comes back. So it was good. They did a really funny one, and I thought it was super funny.
Well, it's a good thing because it is a comedy.
They did one on basically Uber, trying to get like a good Uber score.
Oh yeah, no, I saw that. It was sort of like a Black Mirror takeoff, and they even referenced Black Mirror at the end.
And I thought it was super funny.
I make like, oh, five stars.
Like, oh, maybe I'll ask him a question. This is so funny. Because that's in many ways, that's kind of how it, like, what? Yeah,
I'll ask him something. Well, the funny one, I think the funniest one for me was, I'll ask him something that I know nobody else asked him. So you've been driving Uber for long?
But so there's a joke. Well, back on Call for Help, anytime we talk to a caller into the show, is that the number one question we always ask them, how's the weather?
Oh, yeah. Because well, it's a universal question.
Yeah. But it's, you know, it's like, that's like, wow, man, we got to come up with some other things we can ask about.
Is it raining there?
Dude, I did miss Emerald City. I'll have to catch up on that.
I watched a lot of Star Trek Voyager this weekend.
Oh, was it one of those because of the flood?
No, it was actually before the flood. On Saturday, Eileen was out of town. I just sort of found myself binging.
Is that your comfort show?
Kind of is these days, yeah.
Because like it's, you know, like how people go to comfort food?
Yeah.
I go to comfort gaming. I play video games.
Because it's good enough that I don't roll my eyes. But it's not I've seen it before, and it's not so complex that I can't, like, you know, drift away and do something else or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Say hello to Uncle Tom.
Oh, hi, Ellie.
Where are you? Oh, wait.
Oh, hi, Jen. There you are. There's Ellie. The whole family's there. Hooray.
Whole family. You're going to be older at the end of this week. I mean, you already are older right now. Bye-bye.
She wants to come back. You gave her a taste of the camera, Roger.
Didn't give her a taste of Disneyland. She'll never leave.
Oh, no. What if she doesn't?
Oh, man. It's going to be tough. I might lead her out with a churro. You don't have to help me.
Okay.
Here's a churro. Star Trek. You know what? I'm surprised at how well Star Trek, not so much Next Generation. Next Generation really feels dated, but Voyager doesn't aged pretty well. Like, I can watch it, and it's like, you know what I mean? I'm not sure.
It's a little bit 90s. The ones that I was watching this week were the 99 episodes, though, so they aren't quite as far.
Well, Tom Paris exudes 90s. Yeah. Like, just something about him and his haircut. An Enterprise, too. Enterprise is more recent. That's why. But, it ages pretty well. Actually, the original series ages pretty well, too. If you just...
Well, yeah. Once you look past, like, the period specific effects and things like that, the plots age really well, I think.
You know, how many times did they do that to people, where they split them into different entities or they melded them? B'Elanna was split into two people.
Yeah.
There was the one where Tuvok and Neelix,
yeah. The were one melded I watched. One of the ones I watched this weekend was one where Tuvok has damage to his brain and loses his logic. And Neelix is helping him out because Tuvok wants to have fun now and wants to do fun things and stuff like that.
Yeah, but, like, you know, that's the thing. I forgot how they explained it, because their logic is a discipline. Like, it's something they have to teach themselves to do.
So he loses the ability to carry out that discipline, I suppose. And then when they figure out a cure, he, you know, it's the classic. It's like with Tuvix. It's like, is, do you have the right to take away this person now that they've learned who they are? What makes us a person?
It's true. There was also a very Next Generation episode I remember. I think it was that one where there was that criminal, like a murderer or whatever, and somehow he was medically, surgically repaired, and he could feel guilt.
Oh, right.
Or remorse, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
I hated that episode when I saw it, but
whether you could actually trust him anymore.
Yeah, but I understood what they were getting at, but sometimes I thought just some of the plots were getting ahead of the character. Like I guess maybe, I don't know. Just put him on a penal planet or something. You know, they had all of those. They'll call it New Australia.
I think something that didn't used to bother me that I started to notice more in my more recent viewings is them saying to do something that I'm like, first of all, having to wait for the captain to tell you to do that is like a dangerous delay. Like, raise shields. Like, shouldn't you just raise shields? Shouldn't that just be part of your training? Like, when someone's firing on you, you raise the shields.
Well, and it kind
of... I know some of it actually comes from actual naval operations and whatever, but...
Well, and that's typically... it's weird. I mean, like, you, I don't know. I mean, it's just like there's so many things that seem to be done exactly in two places on the ship, the bridge and the engineering section.
Well, yeah. That's like looking past the special effects, though, to be like, okay, I know they only had so many sets.
What is everyone else doing on the ship?
Well, that's what Star Trek Discovery is supposed to be, which is let's look at a ship from the rest of the decks. So we're going to follow a lieutenant commander around. We're not going to follow the captain. It sounds like they're having trouble with it, though. Because Brian Fuller left, and now they've delayed the premiere, and we don't have a premiere date anymore.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Also, like, it's considering all the threats they face, you'd think they would have a little, you know, a bigger bag of, like, tricks up their sleeve. Because everything they seem to do, they kind of cobble together at the last minute.
They reverse the polarity and do it inverse.
But it's not like, hey, let's go through the database and pull from the 200 things we've developed over multiple seasons of the show. And you know what? Back when we faced, let's try that again. But no, we'll just rely on the same shields. And
yeah, they work.
Yeah.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We'll be back tomorrow with Patrick Beja. I will likely be in the same location, if that matters to you. We'll talk to you then.